Welcome back to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisop. Today we're going to talk about the Knights Templar. Yes. I'm recording this on Friday the 13th. It's May 13th, 2022. And maybe you got excited. Maybe you said, oh, Isaac's doing a Friday the 13th special. I hope he's talking about Jason Voorhees. And whilst that would be fun, I feel like this is a good educational moment for all of us to learn a little bit more about the roots of the day known as Friday the 13th and why it's considered unlucky. And we're going to focus on the Knights Templar, which is a topic that requires many different sources. Everyone's got different angles on who these people were. But, you know, you surely know who they are. You've heard of them. Maybe you've seen their flag. It's the flag of two dudes, one horse. Don't Google that term. I don't know what's going to pop up. Probably something gross. But this flag, it's supposed to represent the roots of the organization of the Knights Templar. And they were so poor, they'd have to share a horse. And this goes into different conspiracies that say, oh, it's a communist organization. But I don't know that I buy that, because they started the first banking industry. So to me, it seems like they'd be more capitalist. And in fact, their funds were used to fund a war with, I think, like England and France. But we're going to unpack it all a bit more. First and foremost, if you're wondering, if you're on my supporter platforms at tier 2 or higher, or the Rockfin, you're probably wondering, where's the video, Isaac? I want to see your ugly mug. And, you know, the truth is, besides the dog barking, don't mind her, the truth is that I'm actually double tasking right now. Long story short, I've had some technical difficulties with my Top Gun film analysis, because there was a making of Top Gun documentary. It's 2.5 hours long, and I watched the whole thing on YouTube, and I needed one little 5-second clip. And wouldn't you know it, in the 1 week it took for me to go from watching this and taking notes to recording the clips I need for you to hear, YouTube torched that guy's account, or girl, I don't want to assume gender. So I have to buy the actual Blu-ray of Top Gun, which is fine. I don't mind throwing a few more bucks to Tom Cruise. Anyway, long story short, you're getting the audio only today. My apologies, all right? Oh, and one more other thing. I'm selling out of t-shirts and the three-quarter sleeve shirts, all those shirts. I got some ultra-soft shirts, because I dropped a new design. You can check it out on the Instagram. And the new design it's a very clever shirt, all right? It's not for everybody. It's going to have a Skull and Bones logo with George Bush's mug on there, in the likeness of George Bush, I should say, because he, of course, was a member of Yale Skull and Bones. And on the back, it says, "Symbols don't kill people. Saturn death cults with symbols kill people." Now, this is sure to get a reaction. And I feel like the people who are anti-conspiracy won't really get it, but the people that are pro-conspiracy are going to be like, this is a person that knows what's up. So anyways, I'm selling out of all the sizes already. I think I'm out of double XLs, and I think I'm out of larges, maybe? I don't know. So get your shirt while you can. And once I sell out more of the sizes, I'm going to put another order in. So stay subscribed and stay tuned if you're looking for your particular size. Okay. Now, the Knights Templar. If you wanted to sum up who they were, why we talk about them, why they're always on the minds of truthers, the Templars were alleged to be the ones that actually spread the mystery religion, the Babylonian mysteries, the teachings of the occult. Supposedly, they worshipped the Baphomet. That's, of course, the goat with the boobs. You've seen it as the logo for the Satanic Temple. They're trying to put those statues up everywhere, right? And technically, the Templars worship the head of the Baphomet. which to it represents the seat of intellect or the Luciferian brain. And we're going to go into all this a lot deeper, so don't start glossing over on me, all right? They started international banking. That's what your History Channel definition of who the Knights Templar were. That's what they'll tell you. They escorted pilgrims to the Holy Land during the Crusades to fight off the Muslims. So there's a lot of good resources if you want the mainstream version of who they were. But you're listening to this show because you don't want that. You want the crazy conspiracy talk, so we're going to do it. And I wanted to define the Knights Templar through a couple of pop culture examples that are more familiar. And then we're going to dive into some deeper topics and deeper theories about who they were or are currently. We don't know. And the first reference will be a book called The Devil and All His Works by Dennis Wheatley. Dennis Wheatley, of course, the guy that gave us The Devil Rides Out, amongst a bunch of other occult books. He was a fictional novel writer, but he was very well-knowledged in the occult. And a few years back, a listener to the show sent me this massive, beautifully illustrated book in the mail. And I don't know if she wants to remain anonymous, but if she's listening, I appreciate it. It's a very, very nice book. But in this book, it has a section on the Middle Ages. And it's talking about the Crusades and the Knights Templar. It says that the Knights Templar was founded in 1119 by Godefroy de Saint-Omer, who was a Albigense, anti-Christian group, right? The Cathars, all those folks. And they worshipped, he says that the Templars worshipped the Baphomet because they got all of their early, wisdom, knowledge, understanding, doctrine from Eastern-leaning mystics and the Arab mystery schools, which ties you into the Assassins, okay? And we're not going to go too deep into this yet. But when the Knights Templar would initiate one another, allegedly they were to spit on the cross, step on the cross, renunciate Christ out loud, strip naked, go up to the idol of the Baphomet, male orgies, sodomy. And all of that is what led to the persecution of the group and Friday the 13th. Now, interestingly enough, in April of 2022, just last month, Pope Francis accused the media of eating poop. Now, because what happened was journalists were questioning if Pope Francis was subtly supporting Putin. And the reason, and I don't know why they, I don't know the details of it, but what I think there is this weird conspiracy slash truth about a moral Christian right supporting Putin because they love a nice, good fascist dictator to force everyone into their belief system. That's the idea. And people look at it, and it's the same way they looked at Trump. It was like, well, you know, the juice is worth the squeeze here. The ends justify the means, whatever. Like, they're strangely comfortable with fascism. And they accuse Pope Francis of kind of gently supporting Putin. And in response, he accused them of coprophilia, which is sex fetish for eating doo-doo. And it was very curious to me because, as you'll find out today when we talk about this, the Catholic Church has always been at odds with the Knights Templar. All right? And the Catholic Church accused the Knights Templar of doing all these heinous acts of kissing each other's anus, and I would argue possibly eating doo-doo. All right. We also talked about the Knights Templar on a show I did, I think it was in 2021. We covered the Midnight Gospel show on Netflix with Duncan Trussell show. In episode 3 of that series on Netflix, season 1. I don't know if there's a season 2 coming or not, but there should be. It was a good show. Episode 3, they had Damien Eccles, the guy from West Memphis 3 that infamously took the Alfred plea, where he admitted to killing the kids, but they got off for time served. Lots of conspiracies as to whether or not Damien Eccles actually did, in fact, kill those kids. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. I hope he didn't. Let's just say that. He's very much tied into occult magic. He practices it. He endorses it. He teaches it. He's friends with Johnny Depp, by the way, too. Johnny Depp and him, I believe they share the same tattoo on their hands. Johnny Depp, I'm going to do a whole show about Johnny Depp. How's that? Is that a good Johnny Depp voice? Anyhow, Johnny Depp. Anyhow, the Knights Templar, his take on the Knights Templar is that they're revered to this day by the occultists because the Templars brought magic, ritual magic, through a current, and a current is defined as energy passed from master to student, so a line of succession, right, through oral tradition, kind of like Kabbalah. These knights brought magic through the current to the United States. And this current, this master to student relationship of handing down knowledge, could very easily tie us into the Arab mystery schools of the Assassins, as a lot of theorists suggest. The Knights brought it to the United States through the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. That's a magical order. Crowley, of course, was a part of. They, in fact, did get indoctrinated in the Middle East. The Knights allegedly worshipped the Baphomet, which again, we talked about that already. And the idea is that the Knights Templar were spreading these mystery teachings all around, and that's, in fact, how they got so much money, and that's how the original first bank started. Now, I'm very curious we're talking about the banks, right? Because right now, I'm sure you're paying attention, the crypto markets are in a wild state of flux. A big opportunity or a big tragedy, depending on how you look at this situation. For me, I am, and this is not financial advice, I'm not a financial advisor, but I'm scooping up, and of course, I'm only spending what I could afford to lose. If I lost the money, it'd be fine. I'd be like, okay, that's fine. Like, that sucks, but whatever. But we've seen this happen multiple times in the history of the crypto market, because we've been talking about crypto since 2017. I did a deep dive, read this whole book on the crypto markets and stuff. So I've casually been keeping an eye on it, investing a little bit here, a little bit there. I mean, nothing crazy. Definitely nothing to retire on. I mean, if I cashed it out, I could probably buy a car. But it's an interesting state of flux, and it's argued that, I don't know if it's Vanguard or Blackstone or the banking cabal or all of the above, but there's different theories that they purposely crashed the Luna. Terra, the Terra exchange. Anyway, the banks hold a lot of power, long story short. Another place you may have seen Knights Templar, National Treasure, a Disney film about Freemasons hiding treasure. And Nick Cage plays the role of Ben Gates. Ben Gates, of course, the gates open the treasure, right? You see how that works? My man Rob Sullivan wrote a few books on occult symbolism in movies, and I believe he covered National Treasure in there. I'm pretty sure he did. I did a couple episodes with him in the past. I think the first one was in 2017 or 18, and then recently in 2021, I think. And now the film, it starts out, and it tells you right away that the ancestors were talking about treasure found by the Knights Templar that was protected by the Freemasons. Now, some would say this is the Philosopher's Stone of alchemy. Some would say it's the Foundation Stone, which is known as Lucifer's Stone, which is allegedly the gem that fell from the crown of Lucifer as he fell from the heavens. Or the Holy Grail, or the Lapis Exilis. Doesn't matter. All of those things symbolize the secrets for man to become God through the knowledge, through the hidden wisdom. Another example we could talk about, and then we're going to get into Friday the 13th. Oreos, your favorite cookie, right? And in fact, we talked about them having a commercial talking about how they were sending Oreos to the extraterrestrials, if you remember seeing that. And lots of advancements in the alien agenda going on, too, if you're paying attention. There's a, I believe it's Tuesday, was that May 17th, there's a UFO public, I don't know, hearing or something like that. Worth checking out. But on the Oreos, if you look at the symbolism of an Oreo, you see the double cross combined with the cross of Leviathan. And the double cross is something we've talked about before. It's known as the cross of Lorraine, and it's also symbolism used by the Knights Templar. And, you know, some people say, oh, you know, these symbols, they represent protection and balance. But the Leviathan cross, which is the alchemical symbol for sulfur, of course, associated with the devil and brimstone. But it's also used as a mockery of the cross, which is obviously Knights Templar territory, because that's allegedly what the initiates would have to do to become a member. And there's claims that the Knights Templar themselves created the Leviathan cross. All right. Now, to understand why Friday the 13th matters, you have to understand who the Knights Templar is. And there's many different sort of ideas and perspectives, because it was a very, I don't know, controversial group, I guess. And so officially, if you go back to, they say back in 1119, the king of Jerusalem hired 9 knights to look for lost relics. And this group, the Knights Templar, were led by the Cathar Gnostic occultist, the guy I butchered his name earlier, Godfroy de Saint-Omer. They were led by him. And he supposedly hated Jesus. Oh my goodness, he hated him. But they would, of course, go on to establish the first banking system. But the theory is that they learned all these secret doctrines while they were hanging out in the Middle East and all that stuff, right? And you say, well, why would Christians hire this group? Why they're supposed to lead the Christians through to the Holy Land and protect them? Why would they do that if they didn't like Christ? Well, the conspiracy is that they learned this tactic from the assassins, that you would have to embed yourself into your opposing group. You would have to sleep with the enemy, more or less, to infiltrate and ultimately destroy whatever group you were trying to get into. And that's where the big conspiracy lies, because, you know, they were claiming these guys were doing occult rituals and having gay sexy time and spitting on the cross and worshiping the head of Baphomet, which some say is actually the head of John the Baptist, like the John the Baptist. Anyhow, there are all these conspiracies floating around. Then on October 13th, Friday the 13th, 1307, the king figured it all out. He put all these pieces together and he was like, you know what? No more gay sexy time. No more spitting on the cross. You're all getting arrested. And the leader of the group at that point, because this is, you know, a couple hundred years later, the grand master of the group, Jacques de Molay, was burned at the stake for his beliefs. And then fast forward another 600 years, and your boy Walt Disney is a member of the Order of de Molay. Yes, Jacques de Molay, the same Jacques de Molay, the Grand Master of the Knights Templar. There was a quasi-Freemasonic group called the Order of de Molay. And Walt Disney was a member, and what it did was it was teaching young, I don't know if it was just men only, it probably was, young people how to entertain secret society ideals and initiations and rituals and all that. Well, this ties all into the Baphomet, which is a satanic symbol. the Gnostics, and you have to understand that if the Knights Templar, which were Gnostic, they would subscribe to the idea that Satan, the serpent, is the real God. Whereas God the Father, that the Christians worship, that's the false God. That's the demiurge. So it all kind of makes sense, right? Because you're like, okay, well, they claim to be Christian, and that's a tactic taught to them by the assassins of how to break up a group. And why would they want to break up the Christians? Well, it's because they're Gnostics. And what are the Gnostics? What's their beef with Christianity? Their beef is that the God of Christianity is the false God. That's the real devil tricking all of us. So you can see they would have a higher power, a higher purpose for doing all this. There's a guy named Joseph von Hammer Purgstall. Great name for like a metal band. He confirmed that the Knights Templar were worshiping the Baphomet. He confirmed they were learning the Gnostic mystery religion from the assassins. And then there's also talk about, there's a guy named Eliphas Levi. He's a guy who practiced occult magic, and he's a guy who actually drew the Baphomet after the Knights Templar. So it's like they all learn from the same current, same magical current. And then Anton LaVey, of course, implemented the symbolism of the Baphomet into the Church of Satan. He called it the Word of the Gnostics. And in the Satanic Bible, he said it was, in fact, the symbol of Satan. And in fact, Crowley even said that the devil's emblem is the Baphomet. So a lot of people who want to say, oh, no, the Baphomet's not, it's not, it has nothing to do with the devil. I think all the people that knew a lot about the devil would argue otherwise. There's a few sources about the, if you go to, about the Knights Templar, if you go to, there's a book called The Secret History of the World by Mark Booth. It's a really good book. They kind of say, oh yeah, the Knights Templar, they're the first bankers. They did initiation rituals, and they kind of wondered if they would even die. They kind of subscribed to this idea of immortality on some levels, of wondering if they could overcome those things. And he talks about how Friday the 13th was the day that the church was destroying them because they were an esoteric threat to the message of Christianity, because they were starting to accumulate a lot of wealth, a lot of land, a lot of money, a lot of influence. And the theory is that when the church arrested all of them, a few of these knights escaped. Obviously they would, right? And they, you know, the knights, when they did get arrested, they claimed that they were tortured to confess, which makes a lot of people question if all of these things are really true. Did they really spit on the cross? Did they really gay sexy time? Or was this part of the Inquisition, of just torturing people until they confessed to something they didn't even do? Which is totally possible, right? I mean, that's what cops do. Kind of. I don't know who needs to hear this, but I watch enough shows about the law. If you ever get arrested, always lawyer up. Never talk to them about anything. Never. Because they will use everything they say against you. That's a fact. And yeah, and look, to be fair, like, cops have that's a miserably tough job. I couldn't imagine the shit they got to deal with. But to be fair, it's like, it just becomes a job. And it's like, okay, I got this murder case. How do I solve it so I can move on to the next one? And you arrest somebody, and that person says something that seems a little shady, and it's like, boom, we're going to put it on that guy, moving on. But you don't want to be that guy. So if you're ever getting arrested, you always lawyer up. You never talk to him. Never, 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 never. That's not legal advice. I'm not a lawyer. It's just something I've observed from many years of watching shows about how the cops operate. No offense to cops. Should be doing some shady shit sometimes. Oh, boy. The Book of Jeremiah. The Book of Jeremiah, some of the Dead Sea Scrolls, they used a cipher that would swap letters around in a word, right? And when you apply that cipher, and this goes into ideas of Kabbalism and ideas of the Bible holding these esoteric secrets that were encoded, and only the Gnostics and these Luciferian types could understand what they're really saying. That's the idea. But when you apply the cipher to the term Baphomet, you get the word wisdom. All right. So that's the secret history of the world's take on what this was. And they more or less seem apologetic to the Knights Templar and say, look, they were tortured. And even when you go through enough pain and torture, you enter into an altered state and you begin admitting to things that aren't true. It's like being sleep deprived. But the book seems to say, look, they were worshiping the Baphomet, but it wasn't the devil. It was wisdom, which is what they always fall back on. And look, I don't know if it's true or not. These Gnostics and these Cathars, they're just like, look, man, we just worship the wisdom and the knowledge. That's the true God. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, Bill Cooper, a legend in the conspiracy community, he did a very exhaustive series called The Mystery Babylon. It's like, what is it, 20, 30 episodes? Really good, though. If you ever have 20, 30 hours, go for it. And I'm going to read you some notes from that to save you 20, 30 hours, okay? He goes back and he says, okay, look, back in 1110, you had the Priory of Sion, the secret society, and they crowned the first Christian king of Jerusalem. And that would be, what was that guy's name earlier? I said it. King of Jerusalem. Oh, I didn't give you a name. He's the guy who hired Godfrey de Saint Omer. That guy. All right. He recruited 9 knights to look for relics. And a few years later, the 9 knights bonded as an order, capital O. And he asserts they were commissioned by the Priory of Sion. Yes, the same one you read about in Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code books. This is like the most powerful secret society ever, right? And they bestowed that power to the Knights Templar. They, of course, create the first international banking system. They learned secret society information and wisdom from Mystery Babylon, from the assassins. Again, there's another claim that they got it from the Middle East assassins. They brought it to Europe, disguised it as Christianity. A tactic, of course, learned from the assassins. A Trojan horse, if you will. And Cooper's angle is that the Templars were the first example of communism. Remember, we talked about how the two guys shared one horse. Two men, one horse. Because they were so poor. But it wasn't true. They were not poor. You can see from the beginning, they were established to be set up for success and have lots of funds and wealth and all that. And on the flag, there's like a black and white banner, and that's representative of duality, the androgynous god, the Baphomet, the goat, male and female combined, right? So the Templar, they were supposed to protect Christians. That was the cover-up story. Well, then, okay, let's see what else is relevant here. You know, some popes got involved. Pope Eugenius III in 1146 changed the logo of the symbolism of the Knights Templar. Had a white mantle with a red cross, right? Templars this whole time, they're collecting donations. They hook up with the assassins. They learn even more about the secret tricks. The Templars try to take over Damascus using techniques from the assassins, the Ishmaelites. Von Hammer, remember the cool metal band name I gave you earlier? Where was it? I don't know. This is a deep topic, right? It's a lot to talk about. I lost it already. Sorry about that. Joseph von Hammer Pergstall. There you go. So von Hammer, he befriended the two groups, you know, the assassins and the Templars. And he's the one that facilitated these two to, you know, transfer the knowledge and the ideas for the greater good. All right. Now, the Templars eventually would be freed from the religious requirements of a typical Christian, like having to tithe, different burial requirements and such. And Bill Cooper says that the Hospitallers was a group that was the same thing as the Templars. They just sort of transferred, changed names. And it wasn't until 1184 that allegations began to circle about the Templars because of a guy named Saladin that left and spilled the beans, apparently. And there's lots of different ideas about the Templars that he shares. He says that they would be buried with their legs crossed, and this is where the idea of the skull and bones, crossbones, comes from. You know, and the bones, of course, are thigh bones, if you ever see it. And they put this on the gravestones of all the Knights Templars. It's where you get the idea for the skull and bones, the Yale skull and bones. Pope Clement tried to merge the Hospitallers and the Templars officially, right? Because Cooper's saying, like, look, this is the same group, just under two names. And to support that claim, I guess, Pope Clement was like, hey, you guys are the same thing. Why don't you just join together again? But Jacques de Molay was very specific about refusing to allow this, right? Which sort of supports the idea that the Knights Templar slash assassin slash Gnostic wisdom did in fact persist even after the persecution of the Knights Templar. So, of course, you know, Friday the 13th happens. One of the imprisoned Templars snitches on King Philip and starts talking about all the stuff, you know, spitting on the cross and allegiance to Saladin and all this crazy stuff. They despise the church. They have these big stone phallus statues. And they're how the Knights Templar were like such a rote. The snitch was saying, like, look, there was no crime committed that was bad as long as it was to help the order. Order of the Quest, some called them. And then, September 12th, 1307, after the snitch revealed all the stuff, the letters were sent around warning kings about Friday, October 13th, 1307. They said, look, we're about to pull the October surprise. This is where that term comes from as well, supposedly. So the Templars, of course, they're in the know. They're all connected. They knew about it. They were like, oh, they're going to try to arrest all of us. So they started moving their wealth. And they had a lot of real estate. There was a lot of gold and relics that were never found that the Templars were in possession of. Now, the only thing that makes me not believe this would be that Jacques de Molay, who was the Grand Master of the Templars when they got arrested on October 13th, if he really knew they were about to get arrested, why did he let it happen? Because eventually he got burned at the stake. And he verbally cursed the Pope who executed him. This was in 1313. And that's officially where it all ends. Which, if you believe any of these conspiracies, then you believe that they still circulate to this day. Now, if you want to get real nerdy about this date, it actually goes back to, okay, so King Philip IV was the one on October 13th, 1307, who ordered the Knights Templar to be arrested all the same time. They wanted to, you know, October surprise them and arrest them all at once. And according to the demands, Pope Clement, you know, because you got King Philip and Pope Clement. Pope Clement issued the, Pastoralis Permanente. So that's issued by Pope Clement V, and he issued that on November 22nd, 1307, to all the Christian monarchs to arrest the Knights Templar again. I guess to catch the ones that got away, I don't know. So November 22nd plays a role too, which if you know your conspiracy history, JFK was assassinated on November 22nd, 1963. Now, here's where you get into the Freemasons as well, according to Bill Cooper. He says, look, the Freemasons, they're allowed to believe in any deity that they want, which is heresy for the church, because the church is, you only believe in the Holy Trinity, right? Well, the Masons, supposedly, he says they were established in order to protect the Templars. He says, look, the Freemasons were never a stone guild. Freemason comes from the French term Sons of Light, which ties you into the Priory of Sion. And there's, and it goes into like Richard Lionheart's daughter married Robert Rose, who was a Templar, and their offspring would establish the Scottish Rite of Freemasons and the Rosy Cross and the Rosicrucians. There's a lot of like real nerdy secret society occult doctrine here at the base of it, of bloodlines, right? And there's a book written by Kenneth McKenzie, this Freemason, called the Royal Masonic Encyclopedia. And he confirms the Templars were worshipping the Baphomet. He says, Baphomet, none other than the Ancient of Days or Creator. More cannot be said here without improperly revealing what we are bound to heal, conceal, and never reveal. And there's also, and this is, I couldn't find a copy of McKenzie's book, but apparently there's a passage about the Baphomet. And it says, Von Hammer, a bitter enemy of the Templars, in his book entitled The Mystery of Baphomet Revealed, revived this old accusation and attached to the Baphomet an impious signification. He derived the name from the Greek words. I couldn't read it. Said Baph as baptism. And then the other Greek word as wisdom. So the baptism of wisdom. And it was supposed to represent the admission of the initiated into the secret mysteries of this order. So Von Hammer, was he a friend? Was he an ally? Or was he an enemy trying to infiltrate the group using the tactics of the assassins against themselves? Well, what's interesting, fast forward to 2020. We did a show talking about a Catholic archbishop who was campaigning for how the Freemasons were still tied to the Knights Templar. You go back to June 2020, I've got the full show up on the feed. I'll put a link in the show notes as well. There was this letter that leaked from Archbishop Carlo Vigano to Donald Trump. And in the letter, he talks about good versus evil and how everything going on is a Masonic hit job against Trump. And he talks about the Baphomet and how the whole virus of 2020 is an alchemical process, and all this sounds really good, right? But Vigano is, if you look into the guy, he's like this ultra conservative millionaire. He inherited millions of dollars in real estate and cash from his daddy when he died, which, you know, does that play a role in here? I don't know, maybe. People with lots of money, I question their motives sometimes, is all I'm saying. And I won't reread the letter entirely, but he basically implies that, look, Trump's the savior against the deep state and the equal rights movement going on in America. Because at the time, it was the George Floyd protest. And he apparently thought that was part of the channeling of the devil, right? And he's got some interesting language we're going to point out. I'm going to read you a little bit of the letter. He says, it is quite clear that the use of street protests is instrumental to the purposes of those who would like to see someone elected in the upcoming presidential elections, who embodies the goals of the deep state and who expresses those goals faithfully and with conviction. It will not be surprising if in a few months we learn once again that hidden behind these acts of vandalism and violence, there are those who hope to profit from the dissolution of the social order so as to build a world without freedom. Solve et coagula, as the Masonic adage teaches. Now, the idea that, because he uses those terms, solve et coagula, it's the dissolve and coagulate, to destroy and bring together. This is to, and it's seen on the arms of the Baphomet, right? The forearms of the Baphomet, the goat with the boobs. And the idea is to dissolve the entire social order, including the church, of course, and bring it back into its new form, which he asserts to be Satanism. And pop culture fun fact, J.K. Rowling, the lady who wrote all the Harry Potter books, take a look at the tattoos on her forearms. See what you see. You'll be very surprised. That little homework, a little fun homework for you. You already know what's on there, but I'll let you discover it for yourself. He goes on in the letter, he says, "It's disconcerting that there are bishops, such as those whom I recently denounced, who by their words prove that they are aligned on the opposing side. They are subservient to the deep state, to globalism, to aligned thought, to the New World Order, which they invoke ever more frequently in the name of a universal brotherhood, which has nothing Christian about it, but which evokes the Masonic ideals of those who want to dominate the world by driving God out of the courts, out of schools, out of families, and perhaps even out of churches." And I believe Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, just recently was dropping the New World Order phrase, right? We talked about that just a few weeks ago. But if you want to understand more about the Baphomet and the Solve et Coagula, as I know you do, we got to talk about something that's going to be, it's going to be a little complex, right? I'm talking about Eliphas Lévi's Transcendental Magic. And in the book, he's got a chapter about the magic chain. And he's talking about the occult forces behind the earth and the astral light and the Serpent of Eden. Like, it's real nerdy. I'm gonna try to get through this, but hang in there with me, okay? We're gonna bring it back in through here. He says, "To know how to make use of this agent is to be the trustee of God's own power. All real effective magic, all occult force is there, and its demonstration is the sole end of all genuine books of science. To have control of the great magical agent, there are two operations necessary: to concentrate and project, or in other words, to fix and to move. It is said that enthusiasm is contagious, and why? Because it cannot be produced in the absence of rooted faith. Faith produces faith. To believe is to have a reason for willing. To will with reason is to will with power. I do not say with an infinite, but with an indefinite power. What operates in the intellectual and moral world obtains still more in the physical. And when Archimedes was in want of a lever to move the world." Now, this was interesting, right? And this refers to this mathematician, Archimedes, who proofed out levers with geometry. And he said, "Give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum on which to place it, and I shall move the whole world." Okay. And you can see how this fits into Solve et Coagula, because it's talking about changing the world through leverage, which is what Archbishop Vigano is claiming. In Lévi's book, he goes on to talk about the arm of the androgyne figure of Henry Coonrath, some middle-aged alchemist. He was hanging out with John Dee and Edward Kelly. He wrote books on the spiritual perfection of man. Anyway, he says, "The one arm of the androgyne figure, Henry Coonrath, bore the words coagula and the other solve. To collect and diffuse are nature's two words. But after what manner can we accomplish these operations on the astral light of soul of the world? This is a Kabbalistic idea of a light source, principle taught by Helena Blavatsky with the Akashic Record and so on." And then he talks about, let's see, he says, "Now it is not to such persons that the philosophical stone is promised. The ignoramuses who have turned primitive Christianity from its path by substituting faith for science, dream for experience, fantastic for the real, inquisitors who during so many ages have waged a war of extermination against magic, have succeeded in enveloping with darkness the ancient discoveries of the human mind." And he's saying that science is the real method for finding God, but it's man's God, not the real God, the serpent God. And he goes through a whole lot of stuff that I'm not going to bore you with. And he talks about, where can we pick it up here? He's talking about all these words and philosophies of the philosophical zone. So at the beginning of the French translation of a book by Sieur de Nuysmet on the philosophical salt, the spirit of the earth, is represented standing on a cube over which tongues of flame are passing. The phallus is replaced by the caduceus, the sun and moon figure on the right and left breast. The figure is bearded, crowned, and holds a scepter in his hand. This is the azoth of the sages on its pedestal of salt and sulfur. The symbolic head of the goat of Mendes is occasionally given to this figure. And this is, of course, describing the Baphomet. And this is why they say Eliphas Levi is the first to depict this thing. And some claim that this head on the goat of Mendes is the head of John the Baptist. And it's the one supposedly worshipped and carried around by the Knights Templar. It's a long way to get around to it, right? But that's what it was. So there you go. One more example, because I'm trying to make this fun at the end. I know that was probably a lot for you. It was a lot for me. Let's talk about Hocus Pocus. Yes, in 2021, I did one of my favorite shows ever on Hocus Pocus. A film I thought, I rolled my eyes. I said, I don't want to watch this crap. But it turned out to be the thing that I can contribute, you know, put this on my tombstone. I found and proved to you on that show that this innocent Disney movie was using satanic rituals in the movie. Okay? And in the movie, the witches throw down a book, and if you pause frame by frame, there's one page in particular with a bunch of Latin words on it. And if you look up those Latin words, you find out it's a satanic ritual. I'm going to read to you some notes from the show. Let's see here. Because I ended up buying a book. To prove this, I bought a book on Amazon of Hocus Pocus spell book that I could more clearly see the text. And there's one page, and it says, incantation for sickness. And it says, ofano, oblamo, aspergo, etc., etc., etc. A whole bunch of Latin terms, like maybe 20 of them, right? And if you look into this, there's a book. I had to buy this book too. I mean, there's a lot of steps in this process to prove this to you. It's a book in 1978, which is, of course, long before Hocus Pocus was created. And this book is called The Complete Book of Spells, Ceremonies, and Magic by Mijin Gonzalez Whippler. And the book gives you the exact verbatim Latin phrases you see in the film Hocus Pocus. And when you go into this book to read about, like, well, what is this spell book? What is this, incantation? You go to chapter 22, and it's called The Rites for Power Pagans, Witches, and Satanists. And the chapter discusses how ceremonial magic is used to draw down the energies of gods into the magician. And it talks about the different methods to build up magical power through different paths, through paganism, witchcraft, and Satanism. It talks about the tools used in these ceremonies, how to perform the rituals, how to open the circle, and it talks in particular about a satanic ritual which uses a goat to represent the devil behind the altar, and the goat would have a giant phallus statue nearby with a witch at either side to symbolize the brides of Satan, and the ceremonies would include chanting the statement of denying God, which, oh, by the way, is just like what the Knights Templar were alleged to be doing, and giving faith to the devil, and even worshiping and sacrificing to the devil. And the ceremony concludes with the kissing of the anus of the goat. And again, this is what they claimed the Knights Templar were doing, the Osculum Absconium. And this is when they would start the feast and the sexual orgy. Again, very Knights Templar-esque, right? And even in that book, in that spell book, it talks about foods, which included human flesh, which we talked about cannibalism many times. See the... I did 4 bonus episodes in April 2022 for supporters only. We did 2 shows talking about that exact topic. Link in the show notes. allmylinks.com/IsaacW. You can get on the supporter feeds and listen to over 100 bonus episodes. My God. Talks about how they would dance naked. They would play this game called Blind Man's Bluff where everyone was was naked and the warlock wore a blindfold and chased the naked witches, and if he caught one, he could have his way with her. I mean, these are all, you know, very similar to the ideas of what the Knights Templar were accused of. And even in that ritual, the witches would have sex with that big phallus, saying that they were having sex with the devil. And it says in the book, it says, an Elizabethan manuscript in the British Museum also notes that those witches and warlocks, not totally overcome by their frenzy for each other, recited the following chant to prolong their orgasms. Ofano oblamo aspergo ola noa massa blah blah blah. Right? Verbatim spell incantation that you see in Hocus Pocus. Talking about prolonging sex with the devil. So there you go. And you should check that. I'll put that link in the show notes too. Because that's one of my favorite shows ever. So in conclusion, right? Long-winded talk for Friday the 13th, right? But I wanted to bring it in with the Hocus Pocus. It showed us one example of this current, this lineage of magical thought that persisted all the way back to 1,000 years ago with the Knights Templar, rearing its head in Hollywood with the worship of the Baphomet. And the worship of the Baphomet is not limited to Knights Templar. It's arguable this is the religion of science, the humanists. Because the humanists believe they worship in man's the seat of intellect, which is the Baphomet, the man's wisdom, man's knowledge. And the only way to gain power is through more knowledge, more gnosis, which ties you into the Gnostics and the Cathars and the early creation of the Knights Templar. And what's it all about? It's ultimately about man becoming God. They believe in this Kabbalistic interpretation of reality. They believe in the Gnostic creation myth of the demiurge trapping our spirits that were actually given to us from the real God into this material realm, into this flesh prison. And they believe that, well, the spirit, the soul, came from the real God, the monad, the one. And the only thing that can stop us from elevating and going back to the source is this knowledge, this seat of intellect, the Baphomet. And you can see the popes and the Catholic Church, they have a long history of trying to disavow and distance themselves and shut down this train of thought, but it does make you wonder what's up with it. Are they in league with these people secretly? I mean, the Catholic Church doesn't have the best track record either. There's a lot to think about there, right? So that's it. That's the history of, the best I could do in an hour, right? Of the Knights Templar, Friday the 13th, and the Baphomet. All big topics, all huge topics. And you got to look at a variety of sources and try to make sense of what the real story could be here. So thanks for listening. Thanks for keeping an open mind. And if you want to support the show and sport an incredibly soft t-shirt, it's going to be your favorite shirt. You go to gumroad.com/IsaacW. I've now got, what have I got, like 4 or 5 different designs on there? The new one, which is apropos for today's show, because we talked about the skull and crossbones from the Yale Secret Society that George W. Bush was a member of. That's going to be your favorite shirt. I know it's going to be your favorite. Check it out. You got to get it while supplies last. And if you don't, if your size is missing, stay subscribed. I'm going to give you more updates. You can, in fact, follow me on the Instagram. That's where I'll post a lot of this stuff, pictures and such. I'll get more sizes because I didn't realize how popular that shirt was going to be. Because I'm already running out of my three-quarter sleeve baseball-looking 70s logo shirt. That one turned out to be more popular than I thought, and so did the George Bush shirt. But yeah, get in while you can. Gumroad.com/IsaacW. Link in the show notes as always. Until next time, stay woke.